You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
Deadly Grounds Coffee knows how important your coffee is to you. Every batch is roasted to perfection with a unique special method that brings out the richest, deepest, smoothest flavor you'll ever find. We're coffee freaks too, and deadly serious about our brew. Just one sip and you'll know why we say, once you go deadly, you don't go back. It's truly coffee to die for. So when you're ready to get a little deadly, get online and order yours at getdeadly.com. It's coffee so good, it's scary.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Wicked Horror Show. I'm Kevin, and as always, I'm joined by Tony Has Nine Fingers.
What is going on, people?
And every other week, we're joined by the 13th Wolfman.
Oh, everybody.
Yeah, there's that. And Tony, would you like to introduce our very special guests?
Sure. From the movie Witness Infection, we have director Andy Palmer, who's been on a few times for different movies.
That's right.
Yes, many times.
And we have guests, actually, what, like three or four
three
at
times,
least?
Yeah.
And playing Vince in the movie, we have Vince Don Vito.
What's going on, guys?
How are you?
Thanks for coming on. It was it was a fun movie. Like I was all excited about it when I saw it. There's so many cool names in this movie that I like are legends in my eyes, and it's like this is great. They're all here. Like a lot of voice actors that you don't really get to see like in front of the camera as much. Yeah. You know? So yeah, it's a really cool project, and it's funny, and Andy, would you like to maybe just give a little synopsis about what the movie's about?
Sure. So Witness Infection is about two rival mob families from New Jersey that are accidentally witness relocated to the same town in California, Lake Elsinore. And they kind of, because they're the only mob families in town, they're constantly jawing each other. So to create a peace, the son of one has to marry the daughter of the other, which ultimately gets upended because the zombie apocalypse starts. So it's a little Romeo and Juliet. It's a little mobster comedy and then also some zombie stuff thrown in for good effect.
Yeah, some cool zombie stuff. And and Vince, your character is there's a lot of comic relief in this movie, but your character is a lot of comic relief. Like pretty much whenever he opens his mouth, it's something that I'm like, ah, that's good, you know. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. So
good.
Yeah, I mean, even looking at your IMDb, you've done a lot. Do you do a lot of comedy, or you mostly don't?
I do. It's very interesting because there's not a lot of comedy out there to do. So when you get an opportunity like this, especially the role that I was worked on, you're sort of trying to hit it out of the park without trying. Mm-hmm. I do. But the guys and girls that I'm working with are literally specialists. They're comic assassins, and they could, most of them sometimes just have the opportunity to do it just with their voice.
Yes.
It was quite the experience, especially working with Brett Ernst, who is a stand-up comic. He's got one of the lead roles in the Cobra Kai reboot. And, you know, he does touring dates all over the country. So he pops on set. Then Erin Hayes pops on set. She just did two seasons of Medical Police.
Yep. And she did Children's Hospital. And she did, she's great.
Yeah, she did the Kevin James show.
Correct. You know, so
Kevin White.
And our one of our producers, co-writers, and leads, Carlos Alasraki, who, I mean, the guy cannot open his mouth without you laughing. He is the Andy, stick up, you know, chime in on this. Carlos is one of the absolute funniest people I know. Whether you're going to watch, you know, sports with him or at game night, you literally have to wear Depends because he just cracks up all the time.
Yeah, we've actually had him on a couple times.
Like,
yeah, we've had him on the show.
Carlos is like never off. He's just like rattling voices. Like it's just like you see his mind. His like eyes are like a slot machine of ideas just kind of like going.
The other producer on the show and writer was Jill. I don't want to screw up her last name, so
Million.
Thank you. Yeah, she was on Mad TV.
Yeah.
You know, along with doing a lot of other stuff, and the young lady that played Rose, I know her from like a really obscure movie. You know,
my sister had just seen the movie a few days ago. This is great. You know, you get the opportunity to do a huge part in a movie, and your family waits 2 weeks before they see it. So I was mining her for feedback, also known as compliments. And she said that Rose, besides her brother, she said that Rose was her favorite. Rose got into Monique Coleman, who is just a powerhouse. She comes into the movie and, you know, there's all these great jump cuts and everything stops. And, you know, she's got that that sawed off shotgun pointed at our face, and she just kills it.
Literally.
It's so funny. It's so funny too, because, you know, she's got this great, monologue when you meet her character. And she's talking about how she's not going to go down like Yaphet Kotto, and she's not going to go. And I'm waiting for your character, who is a movie buff, to look back at her and go, but what about Kincaid from Nightmare on Elm Street 3? And what about Ken Foree from Dawn of the Dead? I
mean, well, we're going to have to talk to – we should talk to the writers on, when we do Witness Infection 2. But I do get to, you know, chime in with the George Romero Night of the Living Dead comment afterwards. But it's only because we're freaked out because she has a double barrel shotgun pointed at our face.
And that would have been really funny. Let's talk about all the black people that did die in the movies here. You know, but no. But that was Monique was awesome. She did come in and like she had this huge monologue, and that bar that we shot in was it was an Elks Lodge, and they let us shoot there from 4 a.m. to 4 p.m. And at 4 p.m., that Elks Lodge opened, and there were people outside, and we had to be like wheels up, everybody out, and so they were really short days.
Speaking of wheels up, so that particular Elks Lodge, and I actually shot another movie in there, but that particular Elks Lodge is literally on the approach path to LAX the airport. So during any long take, you're guaranteed that a plane was going to come over, and it literally takes, you know, if you're shooting for 10 hours, it adds another 2 hours to your day because of the air traffic. And it's so frustrating because as you guys probably know, if a plane is literally 5 miles away and this is LAX, so there are huge jets coming in, you're like, there's, you know, the sound guys are, there's a plane, and everybody stops. So, we love the Elks Lodge.
She just like, I mean, it was like two or three takes, and she was like, it was done. And we were like, okay, repo the cameras. And it was just everybody, you know, short days, and everybody was so on their game. And she just came in and like delivered. And across the board, all the reviews have been like,
yeah, she was great. One that I would like to, I mean, I wanted to see more of her, you know, in the movie. I thought she was great. Sure. And I love too that when you pan by, you see her Employee of the Month photo, and she's like a wicked dork. It's awesome.
It's
great. Just real quick, one of our regulars, Sergio, was in the chat room, and he wanted to make sure everyone knew that he's saying hi. So, hi, Sergio. And
hi, Sergio.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a really fun time, and I'm assuming that Carlos was able to get like, because he had Maurice LaMarche in there. He had Tara Strong in there. So these are all people, like, for those who are listening and watching, if you don't know, they're the voice of your youth for the most part. Like everything down from, you know, Pinky and the Brain to like Powerpuff Girls. Yeah, Rocko's Modern Life. So it's like, I'm a fan of voice actors in general. So that's what I was saying before, where it's good to see them in front of the camera from time to time, a little more often, you know, would be nice, because I know that they can act their balls off, you know, because they do it all the time for the cartoons, and, you know, now they're visibly doing it. And I've luckily been able to go to a couple conventions where some of them have been, and, you know, gone to a Q&A, and they like light up the room. It's amazing. These people, they're so talented. And I mean, I guess it's good too. They can walk down the street and most people wouldn't know them, but they're huge.
Yeah.
You know, they have a huge career.
You know, so I've been friends with Carlos for many, many years. And it's, again, as we were mentioning, that the jokes, the ideas, the voices come out of his head nonstop. He's one of the most amazing people to be around. Maurice LaMarche, same thing. I mean, he just is the gravitas. And in the movie, he's incredible. Tara Strong, Rugrats, Powerpuff Girls, Harley Quinn,
Teen Titans.
Yeah,
I mean, it just goes on and on. Tara's actually filming a television show now, which is on
CBC, right?
Thank you.
CBC.
So she's back on camera again.
Nice.
But she is unbelievable. I was able to actually do a TV pilot with both Maurice and Tara this last year. So I got to work with them again, and sort of having Witness Infection under our belt together. They're so much fun. And the fact that they don't get more on-camera work is amazing to me, because they come on set and deliver without question.
Mm. And it really seems that way too. Like it seemed like there was a nice, like close-knit group of friends. Like you can tell, like, you guys are comfortable around each other. You know, especially because some of the stuff was ridiculous.
It was a challenge for me because, like, I didn't cast a person in this movie. Like, usually the director has a lot of to do with the casting. I like to pride myself on really casting so that I don't have to do a lot of work on set, because I don't, you know.
And
Andy's spinning. He's autistic. Yeah. So, you know, when he goes around.
And he left.
While we're waiting for Andy to come back, one of the things I want to ask you about, I'm going to go back to your movie quotes in this movie. How much of that was you and how much of that was script? I mean, when you're like, oh, George Romero, Night of the Living Dead, 1960.
Most of the actual movie references are scripted. There were a lot of stuff that went on in the car, sort of the moving stuff where we're traveling from place to place. What my favorite ad lib is when we're outside the bar and the door is locked and I pick up the brick. And I think I said something like, Goldilocks and not Goldilocks and the Three Bears, or Goldilocks and the Three Pigs. I'll huff and puff.
Yeah.
I mix up two, nursery, you know, children's stories, you know, just things, but everyone on that set is so quick, either because of voiceover or because they're stand-up comics. You can't sit down, even when you're waiting between scenes. You're just thinking, you're going, I gotta get in there. I gotta get in. And Andy was just so kind to let us have some freedom. But Andy, you were saying about not being able to, we basically cast Andy.
Nice.
I mean, that was it. It was like, you know, these are Carlos and Jill's closest friends, and they came in and they were like, here's who's playing who. And I'm like, yeah, but I might want to have a, you know, I have some, and they're like, no, this is who's playing who. And I was like, all right.
You win.
And really, honestly, the only conversation I had to have, it was like a couple of days before we shot, I had a meeting with Carlos and Jill, and this is classic Carlos, is that, like, I'm like, guys, I have, it's really important that we all meet. I'm going to have to go. I want to go over some stuff right before we start shooting, you know. And Jill's like, well, we'll meet at my house. And I was like, great. So I get to Jill's house, and then Carlos calls in and he's like, I can't make it. I'll be on the phone. This is all fine, though. You know, like, it's just like, but it was so important. Okay, fine. You know, but it was just like, Carlos is just like, I'm on the phone, I'm on my motorcycle, but I can hear everything you're saying. but I told him, I said, guys, like, this is going to be the hardest part, is that, you know, you guys know all these folks, and when we start making adjustments and we start changing things, they're going to look to you because they know you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you need them to look to me, because if we have too many people throwing around ideas, we will never make our days ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, that's the one thing that has to happen, is that, like, everybody's gonna look to me, and then we'll come up with ideas and stuff like that. If you have ideas, you know, whisper in my ear, and then we'll do it. And they were awesome. Jill and Carlos were great. And as soon as that kind of, like, as we just established everything, then you're allowed to play and everything moves around at a nice clip and stuff like that. But that was the one thing I was really worried about, was that everybody was just going to be like, so Carlos, what do you think about this? And you're like, oh, I'll be over here pointing the camera, I guess, at somebody, you know?
And Carlos
director over here.
Yeah. Carlos was really great about when he was on set as a producer, sort of staying either on a monitor or really behind the scenes. And then when we were on a break, he'd sort of come by and he would just nod his head and look at me, and he would just go, you know, you guys good. Keep up the energy. Good work.
Yeah.
So he was really great. And then, you know, he just freaked out about making our days money wise.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, go ahead, Tony.
Now I was just going to say, because how many times have we had, you know, people on and they talk about, you know, the craziness behind set and all that stuff, you know, weather wise or whatever, trying to make. Now, with a whole bunch of comedians, is it one of those things where now you have 10 extra like takes because how many people are laughing at the one liners and stuff that might take a little bit longer too? Not that it's, you know, anyone's fault, but you're saying that, you know, Carlos, he opens up his mouth and everyone's laughing. So, you know, sometimes you take 15 extra takes because, you know.
But you got to remember, they got those planes coming in.
It's a Trump dragon. Yeah, you're riding the line always, like with comedy, because you're constantly just being like, what is the right tone of this scene? You know, because it's like you have these like incredibly talented people and all this energy, and comedians especially are just like, it's ideas. Oh, we could do this. Oh, we could do this. And you have to like, are constantly be like cognizant of like how much time we have left in the day. Do we have time for another take? Do we have time for another setup and stuff like that? And still allow and not stifle your talent. Like, it's the worst thing in the world for a director to be like, no, really, we gotta move on. Like, that's the shittiest thing to say to an actor if they have a great idea and you're like, nope, sorry, we gotta pull up the stakes and move on to the next thing. And so it's like you're constantly riding that line.
And you also gotta worry about whether it's gonna flow with the rest of it, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And it's also
if you do get it all recorded and all that, all, you know, and then you look at it and you go, well, it doesn't work. And you cut it and then someone's going, man, what happened?
Yeah. And I mean, I like the other movies that we've had you on for, Andy, this is a completely different kind of movie as well. So that's, you know, have you ever done like more of like a comedy before?
Or is that's my first love. Comedy is my first love.
Nice.
Like, my favorite movie of all time is Roxanne. Like, I think it's a perfect film.
Nice.
So I got into film wanting to do comedies. And then the genre stuff sort of happened through, my producing partner and I had produced a romantic drama for my buddy. And it was like, it was so difficult to sell. And we were like, well, let's go into genre stuff, because it's a little easier to do low budget genre stuff without names and stuff. And then we just really fell in love with the horror community. I mean, the horror community is amazing.
Hmm.
And you start making these films and really, like, I love the horror genre, but I think I love it more because I love the people in the genre, you know, and interacting with folks at conventions and making stuff that, you know, I don't know, the people are just so cool. And but I always try to get back to comedy. I mean, Funhouse Massacre, you know, was a horror comedy. Colebrook has some light moments, but it's more kind of a straight up thriller.
Yeah.
But getting back to doing this, and this is real. This is like more broad comedy. It was.
Yeah. But it still has the little taste of horror in there, like the cool effects and stuff like that. Yeah.
With Jim Olsen doing the effects, you can't go wrong, man. He just nailed those makeup effects.
We had a really terrific special effects team, Jim Ojala and his crew. I mean, you had to see. So, you know, obviously we're on a low budget movie, and in one of our big trailers, we've got special effects and wardrobe, and they're prepping all of these. Andy, what would the
like the boils?
Prosthetics.
The prosthetics.
Like, yeah,
and they're boils. Sort of like on hangers all over the trailer, and you've got one special effect guy going like, "I've got to bloody this." I mean, they really, but they never held us up.
Working with Jim was really similar to working with Kurtzman's crew on Funhouse.
Candy.
And Kurtzman's, you know, fucking legendary.
Hmm.
But yeah, Jim's team was just, they were ready all the time. Because Jim's a director too, and he gets it. You know, makeup, you know, effects makeup is always the one that are like, oh, I need 10 more minutes and stuff like that. And no, never. They were on it all the time.
The one time I think we had the longest holdup was the prop guys one time took the deer carcass off of the car and we needed it on the car. And it just
had to remount it.
Rigged very specifically to keep it high enough. And so I think that was our, you know, correct me if I'm wrong.
It was really the only time we ever were like down. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it was 15 days. So it was just like, there was never a minute that you could, you know, not have that camera running.
15 days.
That particular night we were in Temecula at the winery, which was a friend of a friend, and it's this beautiful, beautiful location. And the crew gets there, the actors get there, and we're, you know, as I'm sure you guys, when you see a new place, you're like, oh wow, look at this, and look, there's this lake, and there's this canopy and a gazebo, and there's an ostrich and a zebra. And we go, how do we get this? And well, it's a friend of one of the producers and a friend of our set guy. And they go, yeah, no worries. We're here all night. Don't worry about it. And a car pulls up. It happens to be the owner's dad who still owns the place. And it's like, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah, it's just like lights everywhere and stuff. And he's like, I'm sorry, you guys are who? And it was pretty funny.
Because it literally looked like we had just sort of plopped in and we're like, well, we're just going to shoot a movie here tonight while
you'll never know. Yeah.
We're just student film. We're just shooting student film. Don't even worry about it.
Band of gypsies, you know.
Yeah. The gypsy filmmakers that just go from winery to winery making films.
I've been to Temecula. That's a beautiful part of California.
But I was during those scenes, I was just like, I want to check that place out. I'm like, it looks like a really nice place to be. Yeah.
It was it was a great, great place to film. Everybody was so nice. Like the woman, Shayana, who owned the dog groomer place, and like the woman across the street that owned the beauty salon. I literally was just driving around Elsinore looking for locations, and we just happened to find, and then Vince's, DeValio's Mexican Grill was this restaurant right behind them. And everybody was like, I guess you can come film. Sure. Why not? You know? And it was like, and it just worked. I mean, it was literally like a back lot where we were just like bouncing between these three places. Yeah.
The dog groomer was here. Sausage truck was literally parked 10 feet away from it.
Yeah.
A Mexican restaurant was attached to, like, it was 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. I mean, it was like it was written in the movie. And, that on an indie film never happened.
Yeah. That's pretty
now, ironically, the exterior of the bar, CC's, was this like biker bar at the top of the mountain. But the inside was tiny. Like, you couldn't have shot the movie in there. And so we ended up doing the interior at the Elks Lodge here in Los Angeles. Hmm. So.
That was something I thought was funny, where it said CC's and then it said Cowboy Cavern.
Yeah. It's I'm like CC's Cowboy. What? I can't remember.
Cowboy Cavern.
Yeah, No, it's Cowboy. What the heck is it?
I can't Let's remember. Go to the videotape.
Yeah.
Cowboy's Tavern. The actual name of the bar is Hell's Kitchen, though.
Hmm.
I just thought it was funny because it's like you have it at the top CC's, then you have like what it was, you know, with two C's. I'm like, so are they, that's like saying Mickey D's McDonald's?
Yeah. Am I the only one that
went redundant, in redundance? Let's do it again, Land.
Yes. When you said CC's, like automatically I was thinking of that like horrible pizza buffet place.
Yeah, it's a pizza buffet.
Yeah, CC's pizza and salad or whatever.
The place, though, Hell's Kitchen, where we shot the exterior, they call it Hell's Kitchen because inside they have a salsa bar inside of a coffin.
Oh.
So cool. It's like an open casket, and then the salsa bar was in there.
It's pretty you saw the ad that we played before the show, Dudley Brown's Coffee. Yeah. When they go to conventions, they have a coffin. They drive up in a hearse, they have a coffin filled with coffee, and it's awesome. Yeah, they're great. Anyway,
I still need to get that coffee. If I'm coming out to Mass in 2 weeks, then I'm getting that coffee from you.
Okay, I'll reach out to Tom and I will get you some.
And so deal. Didn't Kevin tell you that we're going to be receiving gift baskets tomorrow morning?
Ooh. No. No one tells me that. They save that for the talent. Yeah.
I think it was when your internet went down a couple That's minutes ago.
He's like, oh, he's gone. Here's the deal. You're getting the gift basket.
Part of it anymore. Sorry.
So, so we do have the trailer for the movie. So I want to play that. I was going to play the one from the festival that you guys did the premiere. Yeah. It seemed like there was a little bit more gore in that one, but
there's a little more gore.
Yeah, but I pulled the regular one.
Fun, funny.
Yeah. I pulled that one. So here we go is the trailer for Witness Infection. I almost said Witness Infection Program. So just Witness Infection, which is streaming now on Amazon Prime. You can rent it.
iTunes, Vudu, Fandango Now, all those.
Is it going to be getting a physical release?
Yes, it is. And it's going to be, it's kind of like Colebrook. The physical is going to be delayed. It'll all be online, but it'll be on Best Buy. It'll be on Walmart. It'll be on all nice. The things, but it's all online.
Cool. All right. So here's the trailer for Witness Infection.
Vince, we got to go. Carlo needs our help. Let's go.
And Mary, Patricia Miola.
Hi, honey.
And I got to get her pregnant or we're all going to war. Is this right, or did I just wake up in Game of Thrones?
Probably a son.
If you don't do this, the Miolis, they're going to keep coming. They're going to go after you.
Jeez.
Don't. God. They're going to go after your friends.
Daggers were my specialty. Of course, I was 14 years old. I was at the Y.
And then they're going to kill me.
Town of Lake Elsinore, California is suffering what many are calling an apocalyptic end of the world type illness.
Oh.
Holy, is that you?
Is your cousin back on meth?
Are you guys seeing that? We are being chased by zombies.
You are such a...
Such a double standard when you use the B word.
Zombies. What a crazy, stupid f***ing day.
Holy s***. Here's your shine box.
I don't think this is gonna help.
There you go. Here's your shine box. That's that, like when you said that, I laughed literally out loud. I'm like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Because that's one that I quote all the time. I'm
so excited for that.
Every Italian guy from the Bronx's dream. Yeah. To quote, a movie from Scorsese.
Yeah.
Can I just tell you a little bit about, we had mentioned our fantastic FX guy and crew, Jim Ogila. So, Andy, you tell me if I'm overstepping my bounds.
Yeah. No.
But that shot, I was picking out guts inside my shoe for the remainder of that day.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so... The reaction that Jill has in that, her reaction when she gets hit with it, she's literally getting hit with stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It was great. We had one shot.
It was cool because it was like, we did the gag and that the gag was like the thing on the blood on the head and the Jim created like a whole model for Eric and stuff like that. And he smashes it. But the second thing, the thing that hits Jill is like it's a guacamole gun. It's like literally like this like kind of paintball-esque gun with guts and banana peels and all sorts of crazy shit in it.
Blood cannon.
So we were like, well, we need to go in the back. We need to test it to make sure like what the pressure or the right pressure is. And so we go in the back of the bar and, you know, Jim gives it about three pumps and he launches the first one into this cardboard box and blows the back of the cardboard box. And I was like, well, not that many pumps, you know. Jill was there, you know. Oh, so she's standing next to our stunt coordinator and she's like, is it supposed to do that? You know, Dave's like, not that much. And so, it became like one pump, but Jill is at that point, like, she's like this, you know, like waiting for that blood to hit her in the face. And her reaction was so damn natural. It was crazy.
Yeah.
The ghost of Brandon Lee came right before us in that.
Not at all. We were 100% coordinator on set. 100% safe the whole time.
Thank God her head wasn't a cardboard box.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
But that's guacamole gun. Is that what you called it?
Yeah.
Is that what they're called?
I that's what I've heard them be called before. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
I've heard potato guns and blood cannons and But yeah, this movie, I swear, I mean, anyone that sees this movie, there are so many instant quotable lines. You know, you go out and you see like Ghostbusters, you know, back in 84, and you're like, is this true? Yes, sir, he is a dick. You know, you walk out, you have these lines. Here, it's the same thing. That's my cousin. I think that's my cousin Paulie. Is he on meth again?
Yeah.
I mean.
Even just the opening scene, like the one guy in the tent, like I was trying to remember what he said, but he's like, get out of here. What do you like every time he's like, he was saying something and it was like kind of contradicting itself. And I was like, that's fantastic. But,
and then Maurice with the best character names ever, Assy and Gassy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just loved it, man.
Yeah.
One of the dogs in the movie, from reading the very end of the movie, one of the dogs in the movie passed, Mr. Lucky.
Mr. Jack.
Mr. Jack.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was Jill's dog. And he didn't pass during the movie. It was months after. But yeah, I mean, he was really special. He was the sweetest dog ever.
Which one was that dog in the movie?
He was
the little cute
little terrier, right?
The Prince Charles Terrier. Yeah. Or Spaniel.
He's Mr. Mr. Georgesman's dog.
Is he the one that's in the hallway and the arm comes out and pulls it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a very, I was just like, how are you getting that dog to stay still for so long?
She was amazing. Literally just stared. And it was like, it was a one take. And yeah. And
really? That was one take?
For the yank away, they bought like a stuffed King Charles. And we just at the last, like in one take, he just yanks away the stuffed dog. So it was kind of. Just a little camera trickery there.
Nice. Well, it worked.
Well, isn't the one thing they said don't work with animals or children or whatever? Isn't that like the main rules of movies or something?
My friend.
No, all the dogs were amazing in this for this movie. Like these weren't like trained, like John's trained animals came in. It was Jill's dog. It was Greg, our production designer's dog. And then Shayana, the owner of the dog we replaced, that dog, the bigger dog that was on the table that Vince was taking care of, that was her dog. And he literally, every take, just stood there, did nothing. I was like, my dogs have been freaking out.
Yeah.
He is the owner of a dog grooming place. So, I mean, all he had to do is just stand there. I mean, he's probably done that a billion times. Yeah.
So you guys were saying before that, before everything kind of shut down, you were able to go to the premiere and it was in Canada, right? How was that?
No, San Antonio.
Oh,
San Antonio.
I thought it was Canada for some reason.
No, it was the Ha Comedy Arts Festival.
Okay.
Which is a big Latino stand-up comedy festival, but that's where Jill and Carlos met like 8 years ago.
Oh, really?
And so when we finished the movie, they reached out to the guy that runs it, Jeff Valdez, right? Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah. They reached out to Jeff and they were like, hey, we met at this festival. You know, we have this movie, and they were so kind. They like let us like premiere the festival there. So it was great. We premiered the movie, and then we got to go watch just amazing stand-up comics the rest of the weekend.
I'm jealous. I love stand-up. Awesome. I think the last time we were talking to Carlos, I think he was actually talking about trying to get going back into stand-up. Has he been doing that? Well,
yeah, he performed at the festival there.
Nice. Well, I know like now it's kind of tough. Like everyone from California, all the comics from California have like moved to San Antonio was it San Antonio or Austin? No, they moved to Austin.
Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's tough now because it's, you know, nothing's really open out there, but I would love to see him do stand-up.
I have a lot of friends that are stand-ups and I'm like, I'm so proud of like the stand-up. Like they really like, I don't know. Stand-up comedians are amazing to me because most of them are hugely scarred individuals with the biggest hearts on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
And these guys, when COVID hit, like all they were thinking about was like, how do we make people laugh? And like my buddy Skylar Stone is a stand-up comic and he basically created this whole, like, they found this like backyard venue and he does these like secret, he books like amazing. Like he's got Tiffany Haddish coming and a bunch of other people this next week. And he does it in this backyard venue, completely social distance. Everybody has masks. He sells it out really quick. And then it's just like, you know, everybody just got together and figured out ways to, you know.
That's the thing is I'm hoping that things change soon enough for California because there's a lot of stuff that just isn't happening from what I hear. Then again, I'm on the other side of the country, but yeah, I mean, at one point I can understand the relocation to Austin, but at the other point, I'm just like, you just abandoned where you just, you know, were able to hone your craft, you know, like, I don't know, Joe Rogan went there and then everyone just followed him, but, I don't know, whatever.
It's tough.
It is. They want to work. Like that's the thing is they want to work. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just crazy expensive. And they're, you know, we have a lot of issues with taxes are insane. And like, you know, just, you know, like I'm super fucking liberal, but I'm like pay taxes. But like, even me, I'm like, really, is it this many? Is it this, do we have to do this many taxes? Cause this seems like a lot, you know, like it gets, and it's like, what is exactly this going to?
Yeah. So, I hear you.
So, we've had a really tough, my wife and I are
thinking about moving out, you know, with things going remote and, you know, it's just, I don't know. You know, it's tough.
Well, so sorry to bring everything down, guys. What was that?
Yeah, man, jeez.
We're going to Tony's house.
Yeah.
That's right. We're all moving to Tony's house.
You're all welcome
to Jersey.
Well, that's the one thing.
Although here, Jersey's pretty rough these days.
Yeah. And plus,
everywhere is.
The sausage smelled like that because it was in Jersey.
That's right. That was a Ben Bagley impromptu. Does it smell like that in Jersey?
Yes. I noticed it because I've only been to Jersey like a handful of times. And like literally me and Leo were driving to Jersey to go to a convention. And we were driving and I just like, what is that smell? And then we literally saw the Welcome to New Jersey sign.
Welcome to New Jersey.
I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm like, it's totally like accurate. This is great.
You know, the irony about New Jersey is that it has some of the best beaches in the entire world up and down the Jersey Shore. And Jersey gets such a bad rap because the Jersey Turnpike is very industrial. So when you drive through New Jersey, it's a trucking route because it's I-95. It goes, you know, right through the center of the state. And if you would go 5 miles off of the turnpike, you'd go, this is not so bad.
Yeah.
But it's just
that's the thing is like, it was just the smell. Like other than that, I thought it was beautiful. Like I thought that we went to Red Bank. And I thought Red Bank was really nice. And I was like, I would come here on vacation. Like, this place is really cool. I like this place. Yeah. But yeah, I was just making fun because it's fun too. And I like to give Tony crap. But anyways.
Yeah, we're definitely the armpit of the country. Well, you know, certain parts for sure. Even us, we're like, okay, you pass certain parts and you're like, okay, you gotta.
It's like that everywhere, though. Whatever, it's like that everywhere, though. Every state's got that.
I'm from Colorado, and there's a town called Greeley, which is outside of Denver, and it's a big like meat processing, and I think also the Purina factory is out there, and they have a small college, and a lot of my friends went to college at UNC, and so I went and did my you know, check the college out, and you get into Greeley, and man, you're like, what is that smell? You know, you get hit with that meat processing and dog food processing plant all in one. And they're like, you get used to it. You don't even notice it after a while. And I'm like, I think I will. I think I'll notice
there's
it.
There's a city just south of Seattle called Tacoma. Well, not just south. It's but it's called Tacoma. And the joke was, you know you're in Tacoma when you can smell the aroma because it's all these cattle farms down there.
Yeah.
You know, all these dairy farms and whatnot. And I mean, it wasn't rendering, but 5 minutes before that, smell in the air, it smells fine. You get right in there, it's like it hits you like a lead pipe.
And all those damn hippies with their patchouli.
That's right.
Yeah.
Take a bath.
Yeah, hippies.
Take a bath, try something called deodorant, and get a job.
Stop like just rubbing rocks in their armpits thinking that works. Come on.
Hey, Kev, Sergio has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Sergio. I'm not on top of things. Sergio's asking basically, he asks all the time, but so Vince, are you into horror at all? Or is this like your...
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. I hate horror because I grew up with some great, you know, horror classics, The Omen and the Brian De Palma stuff, that real just suspenseful. And I stopped enjoying going to see horror stuff because it scared the bejesus out of me. And then, you know, it's sort of the horror community went into this Saw, Hostel, like, let's cut off body parts thing. And I was just like, I'm done. I'm done with, horror and gore. And now I'm swimming in it, which is great. But if you this has been sort of my reintroduction, and then watching Andy's pieces, Funhouse Massacre and Camp Colebrook, so it's been a nice re-entry into the horror world.
There's so many subgenres. You can find one that you may not absolutely be in love with it, but you'll find one. He's like, okay, this isn't going to be terrifying all the time, or it's not going to be disgusting all the time. That's what I love about horror.
I have a very good friend who is a stand-up, and he loves suspense and horror, and he'll invite me over all the time. He's like, we're watching Annabelle tonight. Mm. And I'll get like a half hour, and I'm like, okay, I'm gone. That's it.
See you.
That's why he doesn't watch Hostel. He wants to be able to travel the world without worrying about whether or not he lands in Eastern.
He's like, I'd like to go to Eastern Europe and find some hookers that aren't going to torture me.
What's also interesting is that, but I have found the horror community and the voiceover community to be so similar in terms of their appreciation of the work, which is really wonderful. And the people that we've now met in the horror world are just as nice and quirky and wacky as the voiceover people, but just so genuine and authentic with their adoration of the work and of the personalities that make the work. So that's been really cool.
Yeah. Just real quick, Tony Gnott, he also knows it is Mr. Tony the Dead, wants to bring up that he came in as we were talking about the stink, and he assumed it was New Jersey, and he was correct.
He is correct. And you are correct. You're going to the bonus round, Tony.
Yes, and he also wanted to make sure that he's saying hi.
Hello, Tony.
Usually the hi comes before the question.
Is that a picture of a bearded John Candy? Is that what he's got going
on?
Yeah,
it was a little,
I love John Candy.
Yeah.
I love John.
Can't go wrong.
If I could remake, like, there's a couple movies that I would want to remake. Summer Rental is one of my all-time.
I think I saw that in the theater.
Carl Reiner made like these gems in the mid-80s. He made Summer Rental and he made Summer School, which are they're fucking classic.
Summer School is the reason I tracked down Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because I wanted to see what they were talking about. That's the reason I went and got it. And then
Chainsaw Dave. So I geeked out yesterday. For some, I don't know if you guys have noticed on Facebook, but there's this new there's this whole thing where they're wanting you to add more friends. They have this whole thing where it's like this row of things.
Yeah,
where
follow this person. Yeah.
I had six connections to Dean Cameron, evidently, who played Chainsaw.
That's cool.
I was like, would you like to add Dean Cameron as your friend? And I was like,
yes,
I fucking do want to add Dean Cameron. And so I clicked it and he accepted. I am friends with Chainsaw.
That's awesome. Well,
fuck off. I'm friends with Charlene Tilton.
Oh, okay. You really? Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. Ooh. But I know exactly what you mean. It's so cool.
It's awesome. I'm like, I'm never going to reach out to him, but I just the fact that like, I'm friends with Chainsaw.
Well, that's exciting for you, but it's exciting for us when people agree to come on the show and do, so this is it's weird.
You guys have a connection to Dean Cameron. Right.
So what you're trying to tell me is now I'm friends with Chainsaw in a roundabout way.
Yeah, you are.
Ah, cool. Okay.
And one of his better, I mean, Summer School was good, but I also liked him in Ski School.
Oh, Ski School movies are amazing. And when they did I don't know if you guys watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but they did an episode dedicated to 80s like sex comedy ski movies, which was hysterical. And he's also, Dean Cameron is also amazing in Men at Work, the Charlie Sheen and Emilio.
Oh, Charlie, that's the best movie. That's
right.
The
pizza man that they kidnap, and he's hysterical. He's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll see him in a movie with Annie Palmer's name on it.
I'm gonna reach out. Nice. I don't know what it's gonna be.
You know what? Well, if you're looking for someone else to be in that movie, I know this guy named Vince also willing to work with Chainsaw.
Vince is
always. And Vince is good friends with Charlene Tilton. So
there you go.
I gotta weigh into Charlene. I mean, sorry for the bad joke. I just love that.
Dean Cameron and Charlene Tilton as husband and wife.
Just saying. But yeah, so after summer school, I went and I found Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is my favorite horror movie of all time. And it's because of summer school. So, summer school, I think, is just great anyways. But yeah, I agree with you. They don't make movies like that anymore. They need to.
No. Good stuff, man.
Yeah. Good stuff. Everyone's too jaded. But anyways,
Texas Chainsaw, though, I didn't watch it as a kid. I watched it later. I bought the first time I saw it was when they did the 4K like upmaster and stuff like that. The first time I'd watched parts of it on cable.
Yeah.
But I really watched it all the way through. And man, it is just like you just look at like Toby Hooper, it is like visceral. It is just like you're just in it with these guys.
Yeah.
And like you fucking feel it, man. It is.
Luckily I was able to have somewhat of a little connection with Gunner before he passed. I worked for a company that his wife was a assistant manager at a store that I was her auditor for.
His wife was his girlfriend.
I said his wife, but I don't know. It was one or the other. They were together forever, but he lived in Maine, and so like he would do the conventions around here a lot, and he knew that I worked there, so he would sign stuff. I know where you work. Instead of I know where you live, awesome. Kind of thing. So it was
that's
good.
Awesome.
He was a good guy. And he's missed for sure. But anyways, I keep bringing everything down. So you had the premiere.
Well,
Go ahead, Tony.
No, I was gonna say Vince brought up how the horror fans are I don't even know like accepting or whatever it is. Did you get to do like a convention run at all? Like because I know. With horror, there's mostly horror movie conventions, but now a little different. They're like, what was it? The Christmas movie convention
a lot of the cast that's in this, I see them at comic book conventions.
So
there's a lot of crossover there. And in, I've even seen some of those, cause some of them have been in Rob Zombie movies and stuff like that. So they'll pop up at horror conventions as well.
We hit Ha. We hit Ha, and then we had gotten into Horror Hound, and Horror Hound was 2 weeks later, and the whole next week it was Vince, myself, Carlos, and Jill on the phone being like, should we go to Ohio and do this? Like it was like we didn't know what was going on with the pandemic, and the day we decided to call it was the day the NBA called it. Called the season, and we were like, yeah, there's no way a money machine like that shuts down unless this is a real thing, and so we all canceled, and it ended up that Horror Hound got canceled I think 2-3 days later.
I can't wait for it to come back.
I was so excited because I'm a huge, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Horror Hound in Indianapolis or in Ohio, but they do a really good job. I've been able to go like 3 or 4 times, and I just was so excited to take these guys because the horror community is just like, I always say this about horror fans is it's an interesting dynamic of making horror movies because there's so many bad horror movies that horror fans usually go into a movie wanting to hate it because they're so used to bad movies, And so it's like, they kind of go in and you're like, I want to shit on this movie. And then if you win them over, they're the nicest, most loyal, like they're with you till the end.
Exactly.
Like, it's like, I can make hits and misses. I've certainly made hits and misses. But like I've had people that fucking hated Camp Coldbrook and then have hit me up and been like, Witness Infection, you're completely redeemed. And all right, it's like they never like write you off forever,
Yeah.
So I love Camp Coldbrook.
The coolest people ever.
I did too. I don't know. Like it's something where I actually like to see like people's earlier work that may not be so great. I love that stuff. I mean, I like to see promise and like to see progression as well.
It's weird, evolution.
The weird thing in film is that like, we grow up, I think as filmmakers, you idolize the guys that like did it right off the bat. You know, like, it's just like, you know, I came up when I wanted to become a filmmaker, I was looking at guys like Tarantino and Rodriguez and, you know, Soderbergh and some of these are, you know, Kevin Smith, like, these guys are all guys that made these huge movies when they were 22 years old.
Yeah.
And they just seem to know everything, you know, and you're like, wow, how did, you know, I could do that. You know, it seems so attainable, but then you get into it and you're like, this is a craft. And you look at those guys are like LeBron. Those are guys that get just like went to the pros right out of high school. They're insanely talented human beings, beyond talented human beings. And so like, I had to come to grips with like, being Horace Grant, you know, I'm gonna say, all right, I'm gonna make an okay movie and I'm gonna stay in the league. You know? I'm gonna make another movie and hopefully it's a little better. And they just, you know, hopefully they just kind of progressively get better and better, you know, and that's something that some filmmakers should look at doing too. And I think Vince, being an actor, is the same way. It's just like you're constantly honing your craft, constantly training yourself, and then, you know, you're an overnight success 25 years later, right?
It's just the way it happens, but you gotta stay in the game. I mean, you just gotta keep working and there's our good friend Tony.
Yeah, yeah. He was basically he's saying that like a lot of times and I'm a big fan of this as well, and this is why I'm hoping that when this comes out, because I can imagine there being some like really cool outtakes from this movie. But he's pointing out that like sometimes you may not love a movie, but then you watch the special features and you know your respect for it grows because you see almost the struggle that they've gone through to make the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, you find a new love for it because you're like, oh geez, they really made this work even though they were dealing with this crap, you know, like it's crazy.
We do have a lot of great outtakes in this movie, which when we do have the laser disc edition of the movie. But what was really interesting, I think, are some of the other stories where you're just, some of the scenes are literally at the end of the winery. It's 4 o'clock in the morning and it's 35 degrees.
Oh geez.
Yeah.
Where we're just literally huddled around a space heater. It's just like sort of more camaraderie of a, you know, low budget movie and everyone just sort of pulling it together.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's why I love doing the podcast, is because you hear the, like, I don't want to say I was one of those jaded fans or whatever. I say this a lot, but I look at movies so much differently now, having people come on and tell, you know, the behind the scenes. And like, I never knew, you know, what it, like when I was watching movies, I wasn't thinking of, you know, okay, you have a 10-day span to tape this and, you know, 3 days out of that, it rains or whatever happens. So much stuff can happen in it that I didn't take into account. I think a lot of the, you know, your everyday film watchers don't think of it that way either until they do sit down, maybe watch the special features and be like, oh, I didn't know this happened or what was going on. Like the commentaries and stuff, you learn so much that, okay, I didn't realize this happened, or you switch stuff in the middle of it and you're, you know, doing what you can. And it's sad, but it's one of those things where that's why I look at movies completely different.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a for instance, Andy, excuse me for 1 second.
No.
When in the reveal of the deer head, that was shot in a park, Andy.
Yeah. It was like a city park in Monrovia. Yeah.
And our set guy put up, I mean, just an amazing Greg Armstrong, fabricated street lights because there were no lights, or because it was wilderness
in that park.
So we get there, there's nothing, but it's freezing, and all of a sudden, like, you know, a half hour later, there's now a street with street lights. But sort of getting back to it, we go you know, actors start really modest, where they're like, you know, I have to change into my wardrobe. I'll go into my trailer. And then, you know, a week in, they're like, the hell with this. I'm changing in front of everybody. They're just so tired of it.
You become family very fast. And it really is quickly. Like, and I appreciate, like, and that's why I love doing these. Cause you know, podcasts is like, you guys get into it and you get to interact and stuff like that. And it is frustrating. Sometimes you get like a critic that just, shits all over your work and stuff like that. And you're like, well, dude, you don't know. But right. but again, like they don't know.
Right.
So you can't get mad at it. You know,
and the one thing that we kind of, you know, touch on a lot is there's a lot of people who are very critical of things, which I can understand. But if they have actually something to say, then that's yeah. good. But most of the yeah. time they don't. They're just like, oh, I don't like it. Why? I just don't like it.
Yeah.
Tell me why. Like, just tell me why you don't like it. Like,
also it's a guttural thing. You can like just feel like you not like it, but you can't look at it and just be like, well, the only thing that I will ever be like, fuck you to a critic is when they go, I could have done that better. And I'm like,
no, you couldn't
because you wouldn't.
That's the other thing that we
so fucking hard.
Yeah. We've said that forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that we kind of hit the head on here at Wicked Horror is like, we might not like a movie.
Yeah.
And we go, I just didn't, you know, it didn't connect with us. But we're never going to crap on it enough to say, you know, we're not going to just tear it through and shred it and say what, it called a piece of garbage because we've never made a movie. We don't know what it takes.
Right. And we've heard stories. Like we've had filmmakers come on and like the movie is like completely edited and then someone breaks into the house and steals the hard drives. Now they have to re-edit the whole movie, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
And totally.
Legal snafus. I had a buddy I think the movie is eventually going to come out, but I helped do some editing for the film and then also edited the trailer for them and stuff like that. And they get caught up in this like legal squabble. It's been like 4 years and that guy's just still sitting on something he just worked so hard for. Any little thing can happen. It's really hard. And it was funny. I was watching an interview with David Fincher, who I love. Zodiac's like top five favorite movie for me. I watch it like 2-3 times a year. And like, but it's like my kingdom to be able to have the freedom that David Fincher has. He said this something, it was like, he says, it's always weird to me that we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on this set. I spend thousands and thousands of dollars on this camera. I spent millions of dollars on this top tier actor to come in and be in my film. And then my entire goal is to get them out as quickly as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's making, and I'm like, that is an excellent point, but that is not realistic for 99% of filmmakers. Like he shoots movies for 150 days. He can do, he can take 3 days to shoot a 2-minute scene. We're doing 9 pages in a day, you know? And it's like, that's the reality for most filmmakers is like, you have 12 hours to solve as many problems as you possibly can. You know?
And see, I'm more impressed with you and the other people, you know, Carpenter and all these other people, I'd say Halloween was made in 18 days.
Yeah.
From start to finish. 1978.
Yeah.
For $300,000
using film. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For $300,000 using film, 18 days. And now it's all digital. And you guys are, I mean, you said this was 15 days. I just lose my mind every time I hear people say, well, we did this. If it's less than a month, I'm like, what the hell? How are you cranking
20
it out?
20 days when you for most movies. 20 days is like, that's comfortable for most movies.
I can't even read a book in 20 days. I just want to point that out. I can't even get through a whole book in 20 days.
Yeah.
I'm dyslexic, it takes a while.
You can do a movie in 20 days, but anything less is a struggle, and anything more is a gift. Like that,
So I'm more impressed with like I said, you and the other independent directors that do it in that crazy amount of time.
Yeah,
you know,
it's crazy.
Here's what I'm impressed with. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Vince.
That I love when you have a celebrity who does a passion project and then they break it down and they go, we really had our hands tied. We got this done for under $20 million.
Yeah. That's always a really good one. You're like, wow, $20 million you say. But it's like, but you don't know, And it's like, you don't know. I did a thing a couple weeks ago, and it was a camera. It was a favor for a friend, and it was a camera test for they're trying to get a project off the ground, and it's a biography, and they had an A-list actress that wanted to play this part, but she didn't know if she could like take on this role. So she wanted to do a camera test, and they didn't have any budget. They're just trying to get this movie off the ground. And they wanted me to come in and kind of help direct it. And I was like, guys, we got to get like, I got to have a little lighting. I got to have a real camera. I was like, this person has never not been on a set in her life that didn't have 100 people surrounding her. So like you're thinking, we should just shoot her with an iPhone so she can see what she looks like. If we show up with an iPhone, she will not know how to deal with that.
Hmm.
And it's not because she's vapid or a jerk. It's that she's used to everything being around her, this entire universe being around her. I was like, you're never going to see her if she can really do it. Cause she's going to be like, oh, this is Scooby-Doo, man. Like, what are we doing here? Hmm. You know,
so you guys,
it was like a couple lights. We had a professional camera, you know, had a little dolly action, and she came out and she was like, oh, this is great. This is so perfect. Thanks for coming out. And she did all this amazing stuff. And, you know, so it's just like, you have to know like what people are used to and stuff like that. You know,
yeah.
Well, you guys will appreciate this. So Andy was recutting the trailer that you showed. And in order to make just a little bit of sense out of the trailer, he calls me and he says, I need you to redo this line. I need a quick, you know, VO. And I grab my phone.
Yeah.
I put it on the stand a few feet away from me. And I send it back to him in 5 minutes. He's like, perfect. We got it. I mean, it's really amazing what you can cheat, what you can do. But that would have never happened in a big movie. You know, they would have had to schedule a day and rent out a VO studio.
Yeah.
It would have cost more than I make in a year to rent out a studio. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, Andy, you still owe me for that VO.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Roughly more than I make in a year. All right, cool. So anyways, but we are done. We're at the hour mark, so we have to wrap things up. So thank you very much, guys. And you can, obviously, you can check out the movie wherever it's, you know, it's streaming everywhere. So you can go rent it. And then also keep your eyes out. So where can people find out when the physical release is happening?
I will find out from Freestyle. I'll reach out to them because I keep checking and it's not available yet. But I think to get like the better slots on the VOD, they do like a 30-day window.
Mm-hmm.
We only came out like 2 weeks ago, so I would say probably another 2 weeks, and we're gonna start seeing it pop up on all the Best Buy and Walmart and all that kind of
cool.
stuff.
Well, yeah, it's a really fun movie. Just in general, I mean, it's lighthearted, but it's also gory and cool at the same time, and it's got a lot of my favorite people in it. So it's and some new favorite people, you know.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah? For sure.
Yeah, I'm talking about Vince. I'm talking about you, Vince.
So Andy, go on.
I will. Sorry.
I say so, Andy. When it does come to physical media, you got to promise, man. You got to see how many people you can do a commentary, because I want to hear that. That's my favorite thing. That's my favorite thing on like Blu-rays and DVDs, is to have like the cast and the crew sit there and just, you know, I remember doing this scene. This is, you know, we went through 23 takes and it was the 13th one that was the best one or something like that.
I do have to say, if there was commentary though, that would
all go. That would, Vince, we need to go to your house and cook a big Italian dinner in your beautiful kitchen. And then sit down and watch the movie while we're munching on pasta.
I'm so down.
That'd be fun. We would have like, oh my gosh, the stories we can tell. Just, I think that'd be a good idea.
Just remember to leave the gun and grab the cannoli.
That's right.
Anyways, so where can people find you if they're looking to follow your work? So Vince, are you on social media and stuff? Like, are you?
I am. You can find me on Instagram, VinceDonVito7, and on Facebook. Vince Don Vito. So it's this pretty face you'll see.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right, Tony?
Facebook,
of course.
For me too. At director Andy Palmer on Insta and just Andy Palmer on Facebook.
Nice. Wolfie, where can people find you?
You can find me on YouTube, The 13th Wolfman, Twitter at The 13th Wolfman, Tumblr, 13th Wolfman, The Prowl. Doing the Wicked Horror Reviews with Kev every other week. I'm doing the Wicked Horror Show, and check out my YouTube. I'm throwing something new up all the time. Tony, what about you?
You can find me at Tony Has Nine Fingers on YouTube, where I do movie reviews, unboxings, anything movie related. I'm doing on there. Tony Has Nine Fingers on TikTok now that I do movie reviews.
Twerking.
Tony's talking.
Yeah.
Tony's Movies on Instagram, where I show off the movies behind me. And of course, here every Tuesday on the Wicked Horror Show. Kevin?
Just A Knuckle on Instagram, and every Tuesday, obviously here. And I'm also doing reviews with Wolfie, and I'm part of Black and White Fright and Secret Underground Hideout, all of which are on the Dorkening Podcast Network. So go to thedorkening.com for more information on that. Thanks again, and go, you know, just go get the VOD for Witness Infection, and then buy it when it comes out on physical media.
Hell yeah.
And that's about that. So thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks to everyone in the chat room. Daniel, John, Sergio, and Tony. Thanks again, and have a good night. Goodbye.
Thanks, guys.
It's ending. It's ended. Cool. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, yeah. And yep. Andy, for real. Yeah. Let me know when you're out here, and I'll see if we can.
We are deciding between Mass and Atlanta right now, so I will know by the end of the week. But I'll hit you up if it ends up being Massachusetts. Cool. That we're doing this.
Yeah. Cool. That'd be awesome.
It'll be fun. It's a straight. Speaking of Summer Rental, it's my first straight comedy.
Really?
Yeah. No horror to be had in this one. So
nice.
It's a fun college comedy. So. We'll let you know what's going on.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, you were talking before about, you know, following people and whatever. Anytime I see you directing stuff, ever since Funhouse Massacre, I told them that it was like, anytime I see Andy Palmer directing, I'm going to have to check it out. So, I saw Camp Colebrook, I'm like, let's get him on, let's talk it, let's watch it. And then this one, of course. So.
Nice. Straight comedy.
So is there any cast set for this movie coming up?
What's that?
Is there any cast set for this movie?
We do have some cast. I have to keep it under wraps now because we haven't made any announcements yet. But we have some pretty fun big names in this one. So nice. It's gonna be my biggest movie ever. So
I'm not saying me because I'm not a comic, but I do know some local comics that are.
That actually would be incredibly helpful because we are gonna have to cast locally for a lot of parts, and I'm really worried about that. Like going out to like. Local casting directors, and they're bringing me like theater kids, and it's like I need comedians.
Yeah, there's a guy that I actually was producing a podcast for a little while back. His name is Jimmy Cash, and he's been making the rounds, opening for some bigger names, like around here. He's open for Robert Kelly, Jessica Kirshan. He did like a little mini tour with this guy. His name is Bob Marley, but he's like a local legend kind of deal.
Nice.
Yeah, and the cool thing with him is that his day job, he's an elementary school janitor. But he's the janitor with stamina. It's
that's awesome.
And he has a t-shirt that's like him with a mullet, and it says
like, but if they did it in Boston, it'd be like, I'm the janitor with stamina.
Oh yeah, yeah. He has like a t-shirt that says janitor, no, custodian in the front, janitor in the back, because he's got a mullet in the picture.
That is amazing.
Yeah, he's wicked funny. Awesome. I'm actually going to see him this weekend, finally. I know that he would definitely be down to even just give it a shot kind of deal.
Cool.
But sweet. Just keep me posted. And that'll be awesome.
We'll do it. All right, y'all.
Cool, man.
I'm going to head out, have some dinner with my wife. You guys are the best.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, have a good one.
See ya.
Thanks, y'all.
Yep.
Good night.
That was fun. Sergio needs to calm the fuck down.
No shit.
For real. He kept asking, are you guys fans of Paranormal Activity? Are you guys fans of Paranormal Activity? It's like, I told him, he's like, are you seeing my comments? And then Tony commented, he's like, wow, Sergio really wants to know if they like know Paranormal Activity. That's why you were laughing.
Sergio was hell-bent on finding out the answer to his question.
Yeah. And I was like, sorry, Sergio. I want to stay on topic, is what I said.
Yeah.